CliffCentral.com.
Alrighty, good morning. It's Friday. Yay. Yay, 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 yay.
Yay, yay.
Alright. Not us in the production booth here. Who is the visitor this morning? Who's that? Nolo.
What's up?
Who's that over there?
This gentleman over here mm-hmm. is Nduzo, and he's shadowing today.
Hola, Nduzo.
Hi, how's it?
I thought you were a vagrant when you walked in just now. What's the story? What are you here to do?
Now I'm here to observe how you guys run the show.
Did someone send you from government?
Nah, not really.
Oh, okay. Who are you with?
Audit?
Admit it. Are you in the intelligence services?
I'm from the CIA.
I knew it. All right, very good. All right, so what are you going to observe, Nolo?
For now, please. Right.
No inappropriate stuff, huh? It's the age of Me Too. You just watch yourself.
All right.
I can't believe we have to tell people that.
Ugh. The times we live in.
It's outrageous.
Goodness gracious.
All right, we'll be talking to the Love Quilt people just now, and that is Gretchen and Loisy. So hang around for that. That's bound to be interesting. And if you want to go along, we'll tell you the details of the event, which is happening tomorrow in Pitoli, Tswane, Pretoria. We've got Crooked Ben, we've got Leanne, we've got Sia, we've got Nolo, we've got you this morning.
I was waiting for adjectives for all of us.
No, it's just because Ben's still bent over and twisted by his back.
I prefer flaming Sia.
You know, it's wedding season, right? I mean, who else is going to weddings in the next couple of weeks? Because
I've got one.
You got one?
Next month.
I haven't been in ages. Mm. You know, I've gone past the age of the divorce parties and... Been to a couple of funerals.
Yeah, those are the worst.
But weddings, obviously, in the summer, very different to a funeral because they're usually happy. And this
but
one,
they start out like that. Yeah,
they start out like that. But listen to what happened at this wedding, and I'm gobsmacked. Apparently, one bride to be experienced a completely different type of nervousness when she stood at the altar.
Oh no!
And revealed the sordid details of her husband to be's affair. To the entire congregation.
Ooh, she'd been waiting for that.
Instead of reading her wedding vows, she read out the text messages that he had been sending another woman.
So she went ahead with the whole procedure. Yeah. Everyone had arrived in their best.
Yes.
She was dressed up. The party was going ahead.
And the night before her wedding, she revealed a number of texts from the number she didn't recognize, exposing her fiancé's double life and turning her world upside down. The woman told all in a post on social media revealing how she came to terms with her alleged betrayal and got revenge in the most dramatic way. So the night before the wedding, she plotted and planned. She'd been enjoying drinks with her bridesmaid when her phone buzzed. She walked over to expecting to see a message of congratulations in anticipation of her big day. What she didn't expect was a number of texts from an unknown number showing screenshots between her fiancé and another woman.
Ooh.
She claims the screenshots were accompanied by a message reading, "I wouldn't marry him, will you? I wouldn't marry him, will you?
I stand a living legend." Ooh. I'm this petty, so I admire this. Oh, yeah.
You like this,
huh? Oh, everyone's gathered around. He probably has paid more for this wedding.
Uh-huh.
You know, you've been dealing with his snoring, his ugly toes, and having to make him breakfast in the morning.
See, it's the day before your wedding. You still think he's great. Trust me.
And then you stand at the altar.
Well, imagine how she felt that night. I mean, she's got all her bridesmaids around there having drinks. Imagine that. So as proof, this other woman sent pictures of her with the guy, along with text between the two of them, which detailed the affair dating from months to just days before. Whew. The text ranged from, "The weekend, you and I, it's on, hot stuff, bring your A game."
How does he still get married
to
knowing that?
Here's one he was sending to the other woman. "Your body is incredible, and shit, do you know how to use it? I wish my girlfriend had half the skills you do."
Whoa. Wow.
Well, you still got a choice, bro.
So the woman who did this at her wedding claims she knew immediately that it was real and began to piece things together, believing she was a fool for not realizing sooner. Her friends all demanded that she call off the wedding, but she couldn't think of it. So she decided to sleep on it instead. And when she woke up, she claims she knew exactly what to do. How's that? She walked down the aisle, turned to the crowd as she reached the altar, and said, "There will be no wedding today. It seems Alex is not who I thought he was." As soon as the words left her mouth, there was a ripple of shock through the church before he attempted to grab her hands. She resisted, taking out her phone and reading the messages out loud.
Oh, my word.
As she did, the color drained from the groom's face before he walked out of the church with his best man following him. She then turned back to the crowd and said, "I love you all, and as horrible as this is, I'm glad that you're all here. This will not be a wedding reception, but instead a celebration of honesty, finding true love and following your heart even when it hurts." Despite her allegedly finding out the man of her dreams was nothing of the sort, the newly single bride said, "This is going to be one hell of a party."
Oh, you see, she saw that in the right light. She carried on with the party, made good of it, and she turned all of that around in her head in less than 24 hours.
Made lemon from lemonade from lemons.
Yeah.
Do we know where this happened?
No.
Well, not Witbank, because you carry on with stuff like that. It's the norm.
What, in Witbank?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. You but don't.
Also, like, she's doing.
Him you're always mean about Witbank, Ben.
She's doing him a favor by ousting him as well.
Yes. In what way?
Well, if you're a prick in life, see, you carry on being a prick
you
until
need to be
you get to until you hit a wall or just like a reckoning. And she's given him his reckoning. So maybe he'll be less of a prick now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some people will never change.
How's that, also though? True. Imagine your wedding and this happens to you.
Jeez.
She
really did the best thing that she could have done.
Maybe there'll be more people like this who'll turn their wedding into a party and a celebration of honesty when they discover someone's been cheating on them. Hmm.
Oh, it's... my stomach is in knots. Just minding your own business at the wedding, you're there. What do you say now if you were attending the wedding?
Hey, I'm sorry.
Like I always knew.
A lot of guests would have gone home, I'm sure, immediately.
Oh, for sure. Especially the groom.
The one side, half of the church.
Oh, I am cringing.
All right, well, let's look at some other stuff, because hopefully that doesn't happen to you at any of the weddings you're going to over December and November.
Well, just very quickly then, if we're talking about weddings, let's all just try not to judge and slightly roll our eyes at this, because officially in Japan, a 35-year-old man, congratulations to him, has recently tied the knot with a hologram.
Yeah, but, I know. In Japan, they marry vending machines.
This is happening.
I knew about dogs, but I didn't know about inanimate.
No, the one guy married his car.
And that's... I don't want to say to each his own, but this is just odd. His name is Akiko Kondo.
Do you know him?
Of course, yes. I didn't realize he married a hologram.
You need to send him a congratulatory message or something. Yeah. He has been obsessed with this hologram of a virtual singer by the name of Hatsune Miku. Do you know her?
Oh!
Okay. Well, Hatsune, she's from Edenvale.
Of course.
Do you have a nickname for Hatsune?
Ha.
Aha. Uh-huh. That's Hatsune is
Here's a song. Yeah, listen. I mean, who couldn't love that?
Wow, there
we
go. Of
course, it's not a real person, it's a hologram, but to each his own.
It's a two-dimensional model, and Hatsune, this hologram, is really like modeled after a 16-year-old girl, so it has little pigtails and supposedly the hologram does outdoor performances. Mm-hmm. And ever since Akiko laid eyes on this hologram, he just
fell in love
some type of way. They interact through a computer. That's the only way they can really communicate.
That poor computer. Oh my god, that poor computer.
The things a computer has experienced.
Oh.
What a way to be a middleman.
There was even an official wedding that they had, which cost a cool $17,000. They had it at a local hall. Vows were exchanged.
Let me guess, there weren't a lot of guests. I can't imagine a lot of people would have pitched for this farcical wedding. Probably three.
This guy can't have a lot of friends if he's marrying a hologram.
No.
All we know about him so far is that he's a school administrator.
Okay. Be very careful if your children are at school. Yeah, exactly.
So,
wow.
Doing research on this story, there's a company that deals with officiating weddings in Japan. Supposedly, this is the norm. They call this a cross-dimension couple. And in over the past couple of months, there have been more than 3,700 certificates of
the,
this.
And the LGBTQIA
issue.
List keeps getting longer because now this will be HH. Hologram.
Hologram as well. Okay. That's inclusive.
H plus.
3,700 couples like this.
Yeah. Well, yes. Of course. There are a lot of people with mental illness. Okay. Let's move on to other things.
Yes.
Well, because Japan is quite close to China, which is apparently going to be the world's most popular tourist destination very, very soon. It isn't yet, but it's going to be. I mean, it's an enormous country.
Yeah.
With very interesting things to see.
They say it'll be about 12 years, which is soon.
Yeah.
It'll become the most traveled, most visited travel destination.
Yeah.
Are they
counting local tourism as well for these numbers?
Maybe.
Maybe.
because if you live in like the northeast of China and you go to the southwest, it's just it's a totally different universe.
Mm. So what would we see if we went? We'd go and visit the Great Wall of
Great
China
Wall,
in Beijing.
Forbidden City.
The Victoria Harbour near Hong Kong.
The Terracotta Warriors. Oh,
yeah. The Yellow Mountains in Huangshan.
Yeah, the Yangtze Kayang River.
Shanghai.
Just sure.
Just see Shanghai.
See, we've already come up with a list of almost 10.
127 million travelers visiting each year is what they expect by the end of the decade, the next decade.
Okay, let's have a whoop around. Who wants to go?
I would.
I'm not bothered. There's like 20 other places I'd sooner go to.
Than China.
Really?
Yeah.
You know they have those mountains.
I mean, obviously everyone will want to go there, but there's better places, there's more interesting places to go.
This is it, you see. A lot of China is unexplored and not very well marketed.
Yeah. I don't know. I have to admit, after going there earlier this year, I really would advocate for anyone. Because it just has a great combination of things. It's the history, it's this futuristic world, it's the culture, it's the food, and these quirky experiences.
I'd be interested in like the rural side and rice paddies and tiny villages where people really haven't.
As a lover of animals, you would be interested in the rurals.
Yes, that's probably where you'd find the most animals, which are probably eaten.
Yeah, exactly. It's very strange.
So at the moment, the most visited destination in the world is?
France.
Yes. Well done.
How did you know that?
I know these things.
86.9 million international tourists arriving last year. Next is Spain, and third is the US. Mm-hmm. China is fourth, so it's not a huge surprise that it'll increase. But for instance, they're at 60.7 million people at the moment compared to France's 87 million. South Africa not on the list, but in Africa, which is the most visited country?
Egypt. Where would people go? Probably either Egypt or... I think.
Do you want a clue?
Yeah, give me a clue.
Yes, it is in very far north Africa.
Ethiopia.
Morocco.
Well done, Ben.
Morocco, of course. Marrakesh. And yeah, okay, good.
Morocco, 10.3 million people. South Africa second with 10. And then it drops right down to 5.7. It's Tunisia, Egypt, Zimbabwe.
Wow.
Algeria, Nigeria, Mozambique, Ivory Coast, Namibia.
No Kenya. Jeepers, that's...
Yeah, that's a good point, Ben.
Well, I've had some shit recently.
Well,
All right.
I'll talk about some shit. This Madeleine McCann is still getting money.
Hang on a second.
Madeleine McCann investigation.
Emma McCann, the mum.
Have they not found her yet?
The Home Office has just pledged an extra £150,000 to find this child. This now amounts to £11.6 million has been spent to try to find this child that went missing in May 2007.
She's gone. Come on. Really? She went missing when I was seven.
2007, when Gareth was...
seven.
But you got to think, like, how can they justify this?
I often see people in like basement parking lots and go, oh, that could be Madeleine McCann. Don't you?
But
no.
But who signs off this money from taxpayers, essentially? How special is this kid? It's just a kid.
I think I saw Madeleine McCann. You know those trolleys with the cardboard on them?
Mm-hmm.
I think I saw her pushing one of those down Rivonia Road the other day.
Why did you tell someone, Gareth? And they would have saved the Home Office £150,000. So irresponsible.
Sia is so uncomfortable right now.
Operation Grange has been going since 2011 after the Portuguese decided they couldn't give a toss.
Yeah. And she's definitely the hide-and-seek champion of all time.
Yeah, she's undefeated, really. £11.6 million is going to try and find this kid. So you got to think, like, are people just taking this money? Because if they found Bin Laden...
Yes, in a cave in Pakistan.
Cave, having a wank, watching American porno, why can't they find her with £11.6 million? So maybe, as Anthea says, you know, this is good money after bad.
Yeah, it's enough now.
Don't mean to be clinical about this matter, but now...
Plus, I mean, they wouldn't even know her anymore. I mean, she spent more time away from them than with them if she's still alive, well, so and it's over.
They're banding about these pictures of her as a four-year-old. That was 11 years ago.
And they've tried to really make up these images of how she'd look today.
So she'd be 15 now.
So she'd be 15. So that obviously with this £11.6 million, they've got someone who can use Photoshop and... going to get a user-generated image about what she could look like nowadays.
Oh, nonsense. Nonsense.
But, but her parents say it gets harder to know what to say.
She just ran past the window outside.
Oh, there she is. Oh, there she is. Finally.
I'm not doing this.
Her parents say it gets harder to know what to say or write as each anniversary of Madeleine's abduction approaches then passes. Life is full and busy, which helps, but Madeleine's still missing. She's still dearly missed.
Her parents are on their own agenda.
There's a whole plane of people that went missing some time ago. Remember that Air Malaysia flight?
Malaysia, yeah.
Their relatives aren't going on like this.
Yeah.
It's just, look, okay.
It's their lives too. They need to make something of it.
All right, you McCanns. Let's level with you. Let's be perfectly reasonable and sensible about this now. She went missing. You say you had nothing to do with it. And ever since then, you've been telling us how much you miss her, telling us how much you miss her, telling how much you miss her. Okay, we believe you didn't do it. Now, can we please just stop? This is ridiculous.
I feel bad for the other kids because they have other kids.
Well, exactly.
And imagine you.
They never talk about them, never once. They don't mention Giles or Savannah.
Brimilda.
Or Brimilda or Terrence or any of the others. You know, never.
I really did believe you. It's like, oh, you know them off the top of your head.
Of course we do.
People go missing all the time. Human trafficking is a major problem in this world, right? Massive problem.
Yeah.
Why is the Home Office not spending money on that? Like, it just seems strange. It seems odd. Like what is so special about this kid, this family, that all this money goes
to? You know what? Let's not get any deeper into this mire. I feel terribly sorry for these people. It's not going anywhere for them. And it's not going to for a long time. I feel awful for them. Must be the worst thing ever to lose a child. Seriously.
Sure.
Can't imagine a worse thing. So here's Piers Morgan arguing with someone. You want to have some fun?
Yeah.
So there's a fat woman came in to sit in the Good Morning Britain studio with Piers Morgan, and she said they don't want to use the word gentleman anymore because she's a feminist, and gentleman, you know, it's about men.
But then we mustn't use ladies either.
Yes, of course. Just give her a chance. Let's listen to the fat woman. Okay, are you ready?
Okay.
All right, so here it is, live from the Piers Morgan Good Morning Britain.
I've known him a long time, and he is a gentleman, isn't he?
He certainly is.
He loves to be... a gentleman with
his
lady.
Perfect example of how you should respect not just women but people in general.
All right, so they're talking about Rod Stewart and what a gentleman he is, right?
Perfect example of how you should respect not just women but people in general and be kinder and nicer to one another.
He even emailed me yesterday. Hello, me old peers. Tomorrow morning, my dear wife is dragging herself out of our cozy bed at the break of dawn to join you on the couch. Admirable. Please.
That's obviously Rod Stewart's wife. She's not the fat woman.
Okay. Try and give her more than 30 seconds. But yes, up the Celtic and up the Gunners for Rod. But actually, even then he was thinking of you and just, you know, really being a gentleman.
Yeah, it's just kindness. It's just spreading a little bit of respect and love, you know,
Rebecca,
which the world needs, I think.
This is feminism gone too far. Why are you trying to ban gentlemen?
I mean,
my job, banning stuff, isn't it? I just love banning things. No, okay, so I don't know Rod Stewart, unlike apparently everybody else here, but I'm sure he is a wonderful man, but he's not a great guy because he's a gentleman. He's a great guy because he's a great guy. And my problem with it is it seems weird to slap a gender on a certain set of characteristics, because we should all be aiming to be decent, kind, supportive and loving. And I think it's really unfair that men are expected to be the ones who do all the caring and providing, when in reality, in a relationship particularly, both genders should be doing
that
for each other.
Has it crossed your mind that we'd like to be the hunters and providers and gentlemen of life? And that lots of women like their men to be like that? They don't actually buy into this radical feminist nonsense, but actually they'd like a man to just go out of his way to stand up when a woman walks in the room, to open a door, to buy her flowers and roses.
You know what's so hard for me in this is I don't think she's making any sense, but I hate Piers. So I'm torn,
because you want to agree with him.
I want to agree with her because I hate Piers, but I can't agree with her, and she just is a humorless person who now has a problem with the word gentleman. Let's let her finish before I climb into this, and you can climb into 0861-555-189. I mean, do you really think we need to ditch the word gentleman?
There's a lot to unpack there. In a relationship, lots of people need to have both sides of it, but realistically, all humans need to be cared for sometimes. And there is a massive male mental health crisis in this country, which I genuinely believe is at least partially caused by the fact that we expect men to fulfil certain gender roles, being strong, being silent,
being
tough, providing.
Oh, what a load of nonsense. Melinda,
it's true. I don't think that's anything to do with being a gentleman. I mean, I think in terms of being a gentleman, it's about the qualities of kindness and respect and thoughtfulness. You know, it's about thinking about another person.
But as Rebecca says, why should those qualities just be engendered by gentlemen?
Well, they shouldn't.
Those
are human
qualities.
I would have stabbed myself in the cock by this stage.
Yeah, completely. Best course of action. What a load of twaddle.
I don't know. She's embarrassing herself.
Are you allowed to be a man or a gentleman by choice and just get on with your life and try to make other people's lives more pleasant and not be the target of bored feminists who just are trying to, in this case, just trying to find some way of hating men legitimately for whatever reason?
That's ridiculous.
Stop it. Come on. Guy opens it. There was a woman who told me that she observed a guy opened a door for another woman once, and this other woman lost her temper and started shouting at the guy for opening the door for her, like he was in the wrong. She said, "Don't treat me like a second-class citizen," or something to that effect. And she, the woman who told me the story, was horrified.
I said it years ago, I remember, on our show years ago, how somebody argued against the fact that when lift doors open, the man lets the woman go in or out or whatever. I like the way that works, not only because I get to go first, but because it just creates some order. And, you know, being an introvert, I don't want to have to communicate or look at this person and figure out who's going to go first. I just, it works. Leave it.
Yeah. We don't need, really, do we need shows like this where these people are arguing about whether or not we should ditch the word gentleman? It's outrageous. They're bored. This would never happen in Somalia. You know why? Because in Somalia, they've got real problems. People don't have money and time and TV talk shows in the morning. I mean, the fact that you could watch this morning show means that you're standing around at home in front of the TV. Get to work!
Do something.
What are you doing? You know, it's outrageous. Anyway. I'm so angry that I have to agree with Piers. That's what really upsets me the most.
That's the biggest part.
Yeah. Anyway, this is what people are interested in the first world. God bless us in the third.
Well, do you want to go from trivial to trivial?
Sure.
PE needs to be renamed.
PE needs to be renamed. PE needs a lot of things. A new name is probably not it.
We cannot function as humans until Port Elizabeth has a new name.
It's like putting lipstick on a pig.
Completely, Leanne. Completely. So there's been, but you can't just rename Port Elizabeth. You've got to obviously then rename the Port Elizabeth International Airport.
Oh, yes.
And they even want to,
it costs a lot of money.
Yeah, they want to rename Uitenhage as well. Now, Uitenhage doesn't need
Uitenhage?
To be. Yeah, it doesn't need to be renamed. The place is a dump. You go there if you want to manufacture something. Why must you then change the name?
Oh.
So there's been some a fair few submissions, of which they'll be voted upon, of course, because right, this is the most important thing
all
ever.
All right, let's go.
Yeah, see, so, you know, for the whites, it's going to be difficult when they try to pronounce Ibera.
Oh?
Ibera.
Huh?
I want to see it. How's it spelled?
G and the Q. I'm and
sorry,
the
that's kind of personal.
G, Ibera.
Q.
You can't just say to someone, I want to see it.
If it's got a G first, it's a bit of a deeper
yeah,
Q click.
Yeah, it's a deeper Q click.
Say it again.
It's difficult for a white tongue. Ibera.
No, Leanne, see, you say it.
Ibera.
Yeah, see,
see how you say it.
It's a more difficult kind
please,
of Q.
Please spell it.
Well, you're sitting right next to my computer here. You can look at
no,
it.
No, I'm squinting. That's why I couldn't sorry. See. Is it an R or an... Oh, yeah, Ribera.
Oh, Ribera. Ribera.
There's right. an R-A at the end. I've never heard of such a word.
So it's a bit of a tongue twister, but that's
a little seen. Bit of a tongue twister,
then
this one.
Ibai.
Ibai, which just means the bay, by the way.
Yeah, or Nelson Mandela City. Those are your top three nominations for...
Oh, guys.
Yeah, that's right. So what's the Ibai is the other one, or
Nelson Mandela City. So therefore the airport.
It sounds too much like Nelson Mandela and Sandton City.
Yeah, people will be
you're
get
right,
confused.
No, it's a little stupid.
They'll be looking for that statue at the foot of the shopping center.
Hello, so statue.
The international airport, then the options there are the Sipho Hashe International Airport, yeah. Nelson Mandela Bay Airport, Raymond Mhlaba Airport, David Sturman Airport, the Khoi San Airport, or Nelson Mandela Airport.
Oh, I don't like any of those. It's like we've run out of ideas. We really have. We're just completely intellectually bankrupt if that's the best set of solutions we can find to this. Otherwise, not a problem.
Why is there a problem with Port Elizabeth as a name?
Well, it's the Queen. The Queen's a colonial...
Oh,
no,
I see.
It's not Trump. Named after that Elizabeth, though. It's named after a wife of some guy. It's not even named after her. That's the funny thing. Right? So nobody even knows the history of it. Nobody knows why. It used to be called... Delagoa Bay.
That's right.
Should we go back to that? I mean, I know this because I studied history. Pick up a history book. Everyone wants to worry about changing everything and you don't bother to learn about where it comes from in the first place. Then you don't really care about anything.
One of the top submissions for the change of Uitenhage is just to call it Garden Town.
Garden Town. It's not a garden town. Uitenhage is a horrible
it's a
place.
Area. It's a Mordor.
Look, yeah. I'm all for changing it. I'm for changing the lives of the people who live in these places. Port Elizabeth is not a happy place at the moment. There isn't much of a local economy. People are fairly desperate. They need jobs. They need employment. We need the economy to grow. Let's do that. And then we can call it whatever you want afterwards.
You can call it Kaching Town if you want.
In fact, Kaching Town would be great because then people would have jobs.
That's what it should be.
I would love that place to be a thriving metropolis, which we could be proud of. But what is the point in naming a place that's in decline other than to put lipstick on a pig, as you pointed out earlier? Really, we should do better. Don't we have better expectations of ourselves? The Eastern Cape is the home of the ANC. It is where the ANC comes from. It is where Nelson Mandela, our greatest South African president, comes from. We should be proud of that place. We should have reason to be excited that we're going to the Eastern Cape. Instead, most people from the Eastern Cape can't wait to get out of it. This is not going to help by renaming it. And politicians are so good at this because they distract us with a name and they don't change anything for the better. It makes me crazy. God bless you, Eastern Cape. I feel so sorry for you that now the politicians are trying to distract you with another name change. I hope that we can fix your economy. I hope we can create jobs in there. Do you know how many people in the Eastern Cape are unemployed? More than in any other province in South Africa.
That's saying something against Limpopo and Mpumalanga.
Exactly. And we're worrying about naming the place differently? Come on. Do me a favor. Tell you what, I love people who are making a difference and people who are trying to help others. People who are trying to improve the condition of particularly children and children orphaned because of HIV and AIDS, which nobody seems to talk about as much as they used to 10 years ago. It's almost become an issue on the back burner now. But for some people, and I've got to welcome this morning, Lwazimo Fokeng and Gretchen Ginnity, who are the founders of the Love Quilt Project, here today to talk to us about They're incredible work. They've brought a love quilt in. And tomorrow there's a big event in Pretoria, which is going to be taking place. They're going to deliver a whole lot of the quilts to the children. And then they head to Cape Town the next weekend for another delivery. My friend Debbie, who lives in Washington, told me about you, so I'm almost a bit embarrassed that I didn't know before. But Loisy and Gretchen, what a pleasure to have you guys here. Thank you so much for coming to join us this morning. How are you this Friday? Are you ready for tomorrow?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us. We really appreciate this. I'm just coming off of a flight, so I'm pretty jet-lagged, but glad to be here.
You look fantastic.
You just got off the flight this morning?
Well, last night, so I've had 5 hours sleep in 2 days.
No, well, thank you for coming. I mean, yeah, all the more reason why I appreciate it so much. So this is the most incredible thing, because there are loads and loads of people who want to help, but they never really get around to doing anything. How did the Love Quilt Project come about?
So the Love Quilt Project actually started back in 2011. It originally started with a church that was affiliated actually with our dear friend who's also in here, Diana Higgs.
Hey, Diana.
So there was I don't know if you're aware that the Anglican Church put out a request to help children who were orphaned by HIV/AIDS, and what are we going to do with them in South Africa? And so they started putting these foster homes together. And to put a long story short, basically our church in America got involved with this, and we helped to build 2 foster homes in the Western Cape and Masipumalele.
That is unbelievable. So there's a cross-Atlantic, cross-country project.
Right. So beautiful. We, and I'm an architect, and so I got very involved in the idea of building a home and the whole thing about the home. And so we honestly thought this was just going to be this simple little project. And these homes only have 6 children in them. And then we place a foster mom who raises these kids to adulthood. So the idea is that you really create this mock family. And then the homes are put in the community that these children are familiar with. So they're with their same language, their culture. You're not taking them out and trying to force a life on them that they don't know anything about. So I loved that concept.
That's
and
beautiful.
So before we came, we decided, well, let's bring a gift. And what could we bring them? And we thought, well, let's bring them some quilts. And then I sort of came up with this idea. I said, well, what if the quilts were filled with messages from children? And again, this was supposed to just be to 6 children, 6 quilts. This was going to be done. And so I had the children in our church create these messages. And we stitched them into quilts. We brought them over. And all of a sudden, this thing took off. Like, it just, the quilts were unveiled. We ended up, in Cape Town Radio. People were quoting Nelson Mandela and the love quilts. And we were all sort of deer in the headlight. Well, here we are, 8, 9 years later. We've worked with over 6,000 children across the United States. We actually became a non-faith-based nonprofit.
Started off from one little church, and now it's become this massive national nonprofit.
And now and one of the reasons we sort of separated from the church was because this is a project that crosses all borders, all lines, and accepts everybody. I always use the analogy of blankets. It's a blanket for, covering the earth.
And people talk about a blanket situation that covers everything.
Right. And beautiful. Quilts, of course, in the history of quilts, is they tell stories. So now what we've done is we now have worked with children in America and children in South Africa, and they learn how to support each other. So this is really more about the lesson that we teach than it is about the quilt itself. The quilt becomes the paper in which the message is written. And what we talk to children about is, in the world of social media, and we go into classrooms across the United States, and again, the children tomorrow will receive the same lesson. We talk so negatively about social media, but we talk to kids, what about positive effects of social media? What about the fact that you are growing up in a generation that's never existed before? The fact that you can connect to somebody across the world in a nanosecond? I grew up in the days where you did pen pals,
that's
and
right.
Waited a week to get your response. They wait and get impatient if they don't get a response back in seconds.
With our post office, Leanne's still waiting for some messages she sent when she was 7.
Sent one in 89, still waiting.
Exactly. So, people are so caught up in the negative part, but it's what about the positive parts? And we talk about gaming, the gaming industry with these kids, and they always light up, games. My nephew has talked about, I've played with games where I have somebody playing from England, and I had another kid come in from China.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had another little middle school guy say, yeah, I was playing with a kid last night from Australia.
Everyone's interconnected like never before. But I think this is such a beautiful story because it shows you that despite the fact that there are many thousands of miles between America and South Africa, and most of these people will never meet. In fact, it's highly unlikely any of them will ever meet. They get to share a little bit of love in this creative process.
Right, and so...
And do so much good.
And the end of the story is that we talk about the kids and we say, well, does it matter when you're talking to these children where they come from? And they kind of look at you like, we don't know what you're talking about. Does it matter their religious beliefs? Does it matter their economic level? Does it matter the color of their skin? And what they've done is, I said, you have found the common thread. And to me, this is the foundation of humanity. And I feel very strongly, and certainly we teach about kindness and compassion and tolerance and love. And that all of these things that you think define you as a human being, all this peripheral stuff gets peeled away. Because at the end of the day, every single person in this room, in a classroom, what's the commonality? We're all human beings, and every human being deserves to be loved. And when you understand that, you can change the world. And we tell the children, you not only can change the world, I believe you're the generation that can create world peace. And so today, we're focusing, in America, we focus on children in South Africa. Tomorrow, the children will focus on suffering children in America. We have HIV/AIDS, we have children with loss, there's vulnerability across the world.
Yeah.
The message is you're not alone. And when you learn to lift each other up, again, you can change the world. And so they create, we hand them these little squares, which I brought you today. These are actually squares that were created by South African children that'll go to America. And they just create whatever comes to their heart. And we say, in place of a hug, you're going to create a message of love or inspiration or just something that might make you happy. Maybe it's just a picture. But it comes from your heart. And then we take these messages and they're stitched into these beautiful quilts. The quilters actually use their own expression of love through the fabrics. They use the fabrics almost like a paintbrush.
Yeah.
And every quilt's different. And then, so tomorrow the children make their own messages. We get this reciprocity. We bring two countries together for the common good. We bring the two countries together who found the common thread.
I think it's beautiful.
And so they create the messages, and then at the end of tomorrow, then they get their own quilts, and they're literally wrapped in this quilt of warmth. And we always say on a night where maybe they're feeling loss or sadness, that what we hope is that this quilt not only wraps them in warmth, but they can look at the messages and know that how much they're loved and supported from so far away.
That's beautiful. Lwazi, how did you get involved in this?
I got involved through working at the embassy. I was posted at Washington 2012 to 2016.
Right.
So I work at DERCO. So that's how we met Christian. And for some reason, I was saying to them this morning, this kind of project, Your Charity, which is also my love, I used to work for Love Life before. So mm-hmm. they just came to me, you know, anything that has to do with NGO, they were just thrown at me. And I was happy with it, you know. When people went to the Hill, when people went to all of these think tanks, I was busy having these small events with the churches. I remember I used to work with Ambassador Rasul, who was very, very supportive. So this is how we got involved. And when I came back, because we have a four-year stint, when I came back, Christian said, you know what, why don't you help Diane as well on this part and continue with it from this part. And I enjoyed it. If I could put food on the table doing this kind of work, I would drop everything.
It's
and
amazing.
Do this. Yeah,
It's obviously very rewarding for you, but it must be incredible for these kids to feel this connection to other people across the world and to have love from someone that doesn't necessarily know them. I mean, apart from the articles themselves, which, as you rightly say, Gretchen, are so beautiful, are there any ways that ordinary people can get involved, like the movement that started in the US with just one church? Is there a way that we in South Africa can participate in this in some way, shape, or form? Maybe someone's listening now. They want to be a part of it?
Well, one of the things that we're doing in the United States, and we're starting to pick it up here in South Africa a little bit more, is any school, any organization with children here can participate in the project. And what we do is we actually send them the lesson, and Diana and Lwazi are here so they can facilitate this here, and they'll send the classroom the art squares. Mm-hmm. They get a lesson, and they can create these and then send them back. We're also looking for quilters in South Africa. What would be beautiful is if they could actually quilt here and send the quilts back to the United States. Again, this idea of reciprocity, so we're all playing on an equal field is important. We have a wonderful website that you can go to, lovequiltproject.org, where there's a lot more information about other ways to participate. And of course, you know, donations are always a good thing to help us. And one of the things that I didn't mention, that's something that's really growing with the project, is we continue to help the education of children as well, because we work across in education schools and all of that. So every child in South Africa that receives a quilt, we make a financial donation to that organization, because we buy shoes, books, and uniforms for the children. So tomorrow we have 75 children coming in. We've made a significant donation there. And then when we go down to the Western Cape, those two original foster homes, which are actually...
You said they're in Matsipumalele?
They're in Matsipumalele, and they're supported by the St. Francis Outreach Trust, which is the oldest Anglican church in Simonstown. And so we have taken on that we've put all 12 children we've been helping to support pay for all of their private school education. Wow. But again, we'll be delivering to seven different homes under that same community, and they've also received donations. And we're hoping to grow that. I mean, I sort of have dreams of grandeur that what I'd really love to do is be able to have like scholarship funds for lower school children.
Sure.
We talk a lot about getting them to university, and there's a lot of scholarships and funds for that. But who's giving them the foundation in which they can get to university? And so...
Is this more fun for you than architecture? Because you seem like you've lit up when you start talking about it.
I'm passionate about children.
Right.
I love the whole idea of home. A matter of fact, when you look at the quilts, the pattern that we use is actually called the log cabin pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is that the block of the pattern is created on the circle of life. And when you look at the block, it's about the home. And the lighter side, the darker sides of the quilt, which you'll see, are sort of the reflective of the darker, harder days of life. And the lighter side are the lighter, happier days of life. And what holds us all together is love. And so architecture for me has many meanings. I'm also an interior designer, so the whole idea of the way people use space, the way that people live their lives, it's all knitted within this.
That's beautiful. Well, I'm so pleased that we got to spend a little bit of time with you this morning, even though you just flew in last night. You must have been pretty tired. And I can only say that this is a really great, it's a magnificent story. Quite apart from the project and the successes that you guys have already had and the lives that you've already changed. But if you want to find out more, go to lovequiltproject.org. And thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow, what a pleasure to meet you. Thank you. That's Gretchen Ginnity and Lwazi Mofokeng. And we also in the background met, and she was quietly hanging around in the background, but we have Diana Higgs here as well. So Diana, congratulations on the work that you've done here too. Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice for a Friday? Did you feel better about things? You know, you hear
so
the news,
much.
You hear the news, and you get all miserable. And then you hear stories like this, and you think, you know what? There are great people in the world doing great things.
Yes, and thank you.
All right, it is Friday, and the best thing about Friday, apart from the fact that you've got the whole weekend to enjoy and do what you want to do, is that George Meany pops by and gives us a full update on everything we need to know about the world of motoring cars, the life around that, the things you need to look out for. The holidays are coming up. Car of the Year is a big thing that's going to take place soon. We're getting closer and closer to finding out who that Car of the Year might be. And George, it's nice to see you.
How's it, Gareth?
What's happening?
Well, Auto Trader South African Car of the Year semi-finalists were announced, so there are 20 of them.
Okay.
And we're getting closer to the finalist announcement, which will be Tuesday.
Can I make a fanfare noise around this?
You can make the biggest fanfare noise.
Well, hang on. Here it is. Here it is.
Right, there we go.
The official Car of the Year noise.
So that's happening on Tuesday, the finalists announcement.
Good.
But at the moment, there's 20 cars in the semi-finalists, and my favorite is the Volvo XC60 because of the technology that exists inside that Volvo XC60.
Like what?
Like self-driving capabilities and anti-collision avoidance, collision avoidance. And, you know, there's a lot of technology inside Volvo today that I think stands them in good stead with their mantra over the years of being the safest car. Now it's the most technologically safest car.
All right.
Well, that's my opinion anyway.
Sure, but Volvo's had a pretty good reputation since day one.
They have. They have. And believe it or not, Volvo started out as being a mishmash of different cars being put together. So, you know, a Mercedes-Benz engine at one point, I think, and then different parts of different cars. And now it's become a brand that is the safest car in the world.
Very
you would
good.
Think a Cyborg wouldn't be safe.
No, there it is. It's probably the best way to go. I mean, when we integrate with the machines, we'll also be much smarter and better at everything.
I heard about somebody marrying a
hologram.
Yeah, that's pretty bizarre. But let's not pay attention to the freaks. Pay no attention to the
circus.
There
are enough of us here.
Yeah.
Something I've never understood, and Volkswagen are actually taking this to the next level. And so what I couldn't understand is car manufacturers up to now want to create their own software inside the car.
Yes.
So you get into a Jeep and they've got the Uconnect system, and you get into...
Yeah, I hate this. Can they all just allow us to use our phones, for example?
Exactly.
Let the phone manufacturer do this.
Exactly. So now VW is taking that seriously, and they're taking it to the next level. They're allowing Siri to control your car.
Yes.
So you can say to Siri, honk the horn, and your car will hoot.
I'd be able to hoot faster than saying that, though.
Probably.
Hey, Siri. Honk the horn.
You'll need to unlock your iPhone first.
Oh, you know, see, by then, the person's already smashed into you.
There's always something.
But what's cool is you can walk up to your car and say, hey, Siri, unlock my car. And, there Siri goes.
See?
Your car's unlocked now.
Your car's unlocked now. Be careful.
If anyone wants to steal George's car, we are in.
Exactly. So I think that's very cool, because Volvo's actually doing what I think car manufacturers should do. Don't try and be a software manufacturer. Be a car manufacturer.
You mean VW, you said Volvo.
I mean, I said it again. I'm obsessed with
you
this
XC60.
You want
them to win.
I do.
All right.
I do.
But this is good. I agree. There's nothing nicer than when everything syncs up in your life. That's why I'm... you don't have to be in the Apple ecosystem. God knows, a lot of people trying to break out.
Yeah.
But it is nice when your computer talks to your watch, talks to your phone, talks to your car. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm an Apple fan, but VW is partnering up with Android as well as Apple. So
good, you've got to do both.
Both of them are in the running to do what I think should be done anyway.
Excellent.
Ford figures out how to eliminate the new car smell.
No, but we like the new car smell.
No, some people, I know people who get a headache from it.
Do you know which nation hates the new car smell? Mm. The Chinese.
Yeah.
Really?
They hate the new car smell for some reason.
Listen, a bit of Chinese takeout in there for a few hours will eliminate everything.
So Chinese manufacturers have figured out a way to get rid of the new car smell. And the way to get rid of a new car smell, if you want the new car smell to be gone in your car, just leave it in the sun with the window slightly open, because the only reason that smell is there is because the odors are leaching out of the plastic and leather. That's what causes the new car smell.
But I like the new car smell.
Everybody loves the new car smell. Then what's wrong with the Chinese?
Yeah, they must... you know what? We'll give you our old cars and you can give us the new ones.
There's nothing worse than that... I don't know a better word than muff.
Yeah, but also that takeaway smell in cars. When people have eaten a lot of takeaways in their cars. Smells a little musty in there.
Yeah, musty. Musty is the right word. Muff is the wrong word.
Yeah.
Then this is hot off the presser.
Oh,
you know,
breaking news.
Breaking.
Should we announce it as breaking news? Here it is. All right, everybody. All right. What is it?
I almost thought I was going to hear the Knight Rider sound. Waymo, which is the Google's arm of self-driving cars.
You know, I didn't know that until you said Waymo. Okay, tell me more.
I know way more than you.
Yeah, exactly. They do know way more than you, China.
Hello, Sia. Welcome. He's cracking
himself
up.
Give Sia a moment.
Yeah!
What else? What else about this Waymo?
So Waymo, the self-driving arm of Google, have been testing cars for the last decade, but the law said that they have to have a backup driver behind the steering wheel of the car while testing these self-driving cars. California has just given Google the go-ahead or approval to now begin testing self-driving or driverless cars in its pure form up to 65 miles an hour with no driver inside.
I don't know if I like that.
And let's see what happens. But what the regulator said was that the car has to have or has to be monitored remotely by a engineer behind a computer at all times.
You know what? We've got to actually get past this now. We've got to stop thinking that having a human there is going to make it better. It's probably going to make it worse.
Probably.
Human reactions are slower. Humans cause accidents every day, hundreds, if not thousands, if not millions of them every day. These self-driving cars have had 5 or 6 accidents in total.
Yeah.
And everybody loses their minds.
That's absolutely right. Yeah.
It's like these people who won't get on a plane. Oh, flying in a plane is so unsafe. Because I watched a show and there was a plane accident.
Mm-hmm.
There are thousands and thousands of planes taking off and landing every day. Stop your paranoia.
Humans are slower than machines.
Damn right. So let's trust the machines a little bit here.
There goes card magic.
Plus your plane's basically driving itself anyway.
George, what will happen to Formula One when they automate cars?
I think motorsport will actually become better. So if you think about late 1800s when horses were the mode of transport, where have horses been relegated to? The racetrack. I think petrol engine cars or internally combustion engine cars will be relegated to the racetrack. We will see more V8s and V10s because that'll be the place to go and see them.
Okay.
That's what I think anyway.
That's very interesting. I would have thought that the opposite would be true, but you're quite right. That's a good comparison to make.
It would be kind of fun to have like an actual Cars the Movie kind of setting. So they're all electronic, but they've got these strange, awkward faces in the front. And
personalities.
And then they make them speak and things.
Yeah, that could happen too.
That movie Cars.
All right. Anything else?
Yep. Lastly, Mercedes-Benz clinched the Constructors' Championship at last week's Sao Paulo Formula One race. And so now Lewis Hamilton holds his 5th title, and so does Mercedes-Benz.
Huh.
So Lewis Hamilton is 2 wins away from Michael Schumacher. And Mercedes-Benz holds the only 5 consecutive Constructors' Championships ever. Which is a good thing.
That's incredible.
But hopefully Ferrari comes back and beats them. I must be honest, I take my hat off to Mercedes-Benz and Lewis Hamilton. I'm not a supporter of them. But this was Ferrari's race to lose. Ferrari lost this. Mercedes didn't win it. They made some stupid mistakes. Put a new floor on the car for a couple of races, and that floor caused them to lose probably about 4 or 5 races.
Is that because people like to say, floor it, floor it?
Floor it, balls to the wall.
Yeah. And that's what happened.
Exactly. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, George. Always good to catch up with you. Have an excellent weekend.
Thank you, Gary.
Are you flying or floating or driving or riding this weekend?
Well, tomorrow is brilliant weather. We have a heat wave. Don't know how the bumps are going to be up there, but I'm going to go and fly my airplane. Yes.
Nice. There we go. See, George is into all kinds of transport.
Mm.
Yeah.
He gets around, eh?
He knows his stuff. Yeah. Most of us, we can barely drive a car. He can drive a car, ride a bike.
You can drift, Gareth.
Plane.
I saw.
Yeah, you tried to teach me. By the end, I was semi-competent.
Oh.
But I wouldn't ever try and ride with me in the hopes of some drifting.
No, I've driven with you. Angifun.
Angifun, is that what you said? All right.
Oh, Jesus.
All right. All right. Thank you very much, George. Thank you to everybody from the Love Quilt Project. You can go and look them up on the internet and find out more. Got an incredible edge, displayed this quilt in the studio and it looks beautiful. And thank you to you for joining us today. The MPs have voted. Expropriation without compensation has moved a step closer to happening. Though there have many more steps in place, the EFF believe they've secured a huge victory here, and urging all tenderpreneurs and institutional looters to not spend money on property at the moment, but rather spend on cars and side chicks, because the land will soon come for free. Denmark is to withhold aid money to Tanzania over their increasing hostility and violence towards gay citizens. A government spokesperson says Tanzania aren't concerned about this and they don't want Denmark's gay money anyway. And finally, Tokyo's 2020 head of cybersecurity just admitted he's never had any desire to use a computer in his entire life. And he's the head of cybersecurity. He's taking offense to people calling him computer illiterate, though. After all, he does have a robotic sex wife, so that must count for something. And we will see you Monday. Have a good weekend. CliffCentral.com